The following is an audio recording from the Aboriginal and Environmental Education Circle, which met on Tuesday, February the 22nd, 2011, at the Peel Aboriginal Network. For more information on our group, please visit aboriginal.davidspencer.ca.
Where's Fort Albany?
Fort Albany is located on the southern tip of the James Bay coast, about an hour and a half from Moose Factory, Moosonee. Accessible only by air or by ice road. So there's quite a few stories. This plane actually that we flew in on, that's the runway. The snow is actually the runway. That's what we're landing on.
Is that the lake?
No, it's a dry strip.
Oh, okay.
So it's gravel in the summer and snow packed in the winter. Coming in after Christmas holiday, this plane almost flew into the actual airport structure. A wind gust took the plane and veered it straight into the building. The pilot was able to regain control and land us safely, but that is one of the things that you know, going up north on a fly-in, that's one of the things that you always face. So I was up there for a year. I was in charge of a senior secondary program, also doing adult continuing ed. Great school, brand new school, great community. I was going to go back for a second year, but I got offered a job at the second school, Pelican Falls First Nations High School, which is drive accessible and closer to my family in Thunder Bay. So I figured, got to jump on the opportunity, be closer to family. Taught there for a year and a half, and then got offered another job a little bit closer with Seven Generations Secondary School, teaching in three different reserves. So everything happens for a reason. I met my fiance in Eagle Lake First Nation. Okay, so Fort Albany, travel is crazy. 2005, I was paying $950 for a return flight. Gas was $2.50 a liter. A bag of milk was $13.80.
Whoa.
So that's all the stuff that you have to take into consideration. Pays a little bit more. You do get some travel allowances and stuff, but definitely cost of living is higher. Rent, however, was $500 a month, all inclusive. So kind of weigh costs and stuff.
It's cheaper to. They said that they were concerned last year. There was an article about the consumption of pop,
yes,
and stuff like that. But when you factored in the cost per ounce,
yep,
it was cheaper to buy your kids and pop, feed them cases of pop.
Pop and chips.
Than it was to feed the milk.
Yeah.
Because, and you know, $6 for 24,
yeah,
pops, or $8 or $13 for a bag of milk.
Yeah. So as a result, there's a real high intake of sugar in the diet.
Well, and you know, the concern is high rates of diabetes.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, yeah, it's $13.80 for a bag of milk and $26 for a watermelon, and buy a bag of chips for $2.99. So chips are light, feed the kids chips, right? So that's a huge thing. The school that I taught at was K-12, about 200 students. And yeah, all the stereotypes, you can throw them out the window, right? It's a great community. I love being up there. It was awesome. This is my teacherage. So we had Bell Express View, so it's not like you're living in the bush. Brand new building.
How many teachers would be sharing that?
Me.
Okay.
Two bedroom house for me. You could share if you wanted to split the costs. So if you want to save your $250 a month, share your house. Not knowing anybody and being the only one from Thunder Bay, I figure I'm going to live alone. Had I gone back for a second year, I probably would have picked up a roommate just for, you know, stuff to do. My house was the cleanest one out of all the teachers because that's what I did. I spent a lot of time hiking around and cleaning my house.
Is there a basement?
There isn't a basement. It's just a open, like, where all the pipes are and stuff.
And heating is electric heat?
Electric heat. Yeah, electric heat, electric baseboards.
What was your average grocery bill in a month?
$500 for myself. So I ate a lot. Well, I was up there, a lot of bread and pasta because it's light. We also started, another teacher and I started baking pizzas. So that was kind of our saving grace, but $40 for a bag of flour got expensive.
But you had running water?
There is running water, yes.
Now, did the rest of the...
Yes.
They all had...
Fort Albany is good for that. Fort Albany and Ksetchewan, I'm not sure how many people have heard of Ksetchewan, but
yeah,
they
Ksetchewan's
were
ones. Their water was on
they were
a
one reserve.
For
yeah, they were one reserve, and they split. The main cause of the split was based on religion. Fort Albany is the more religious community of the two. They have a priest that lives in the community and that kind of stuff. Ksetchewan was trying to take the more traditional route. Fort Albany is in the process of going traditional. When I was there in 2005, they were starting powwows and stuff, but there were still community members who looked down on it.
I just asked my brother-in-law when they were working. He was the nurse because there was no doctor at the station. And my sister couldn't get over the number of visitors they had until they realized it was the kids all wanted to come. We sent her coloring books. And they were fascinated because they were the only house on the reserve that had running water.
Right.
And they would come in just to flush the toilet so that they could
see it. Yeah.
And they just couldn't get over that.
Yeah, no, a majority of the community is on running water. Ksetchewan's main problem is that their water intake is downstream from their water output. And so poor planning in terms of that. Also flooding because they're below the floodplain. So. Fort Albany's not so bad. There was a flood warning. All the teachers had ladders going up to their rooms just in case. And they were ferrying people across via helicopter, and I'll show you some pictures of the breakup. And always in the corner, there's a dog. There's dogs everywhere. We actually adopted a few just because they would come to our doors. This is inside the school. This is their main morning meeting place. My classroom, so we got some free donated computers, which was very useful. This is outside. This is their opening ceremony for the school year. And you can see that the school is actually designed, and that's supposed to be an eagle or a goose. I'm thinking it's probably a goose.
Is that a medicine wheel? That circle?
The circle is a medicine wheel, and there is a dream catcher hanging. You can't see it, but it's off to the side. This is the health center. And this is just some of the waterways coming into the community. It's a little bit of a boat ride up to the actual bay.
This is September season-wise, these pictures?
Yeah, these are in the fall. I've got some winter ones too, which show the nice snow. This is your great photo shot right out near the airport. That's their old health van. And because there is no place to put things, the dump's pretty full, so who wants to drag that beast to the dump? So it's just kind of left there. This is our first snowfall of the year. A coworker there is also taking pictures of it. And the car there, the Ford Explorer, is my boss's, which I got to borrow, and crashed on the ice road. I 360'd it and blew out the back tire into an ice chunk. Wasn't too happy. We were behind this really slow van, and she goes, just passing. So me, I've never driven on glare ice, right? So I step on the gas to pass. Stupid idea. Because when you speed up on ice in two-wheel drive, your back end starts to fishtail. And so I'm trying to pass this van, fishtailing beside them, almost hit them, didn't hit them, spun around a few times, blew out the back tire. They see this all happen, so they're a bit of the ways down. They all back up. Need a ride? Yep. Get in the car, drive to the community, tell my boss that his truck is cracked. Yeah. Thanks for the ride.
You did twice?
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. He wasn't mad or anything, but yeah.
Is there a mechanic shop up there, like, get your car fixed?
No, there's people that know what they're doing, so, you know, we
same
replace
mobiles?
The tire. And
well, there are people
fixed
mobiles as well.
Yeah. Another picture of the house. This is a bit more snow. And a bit more snow. So it's all the way up to the living room window. Yeah, it was a huge dumping. This is on the ice road going to, went to Attawapiskat.
Oh,
nice. With my boss and his wife to play some bingo. Because the jackpot was $60,000. Yeah, so jumped in the car and did the 3-hour commute to play some bingo for the day.
How many cards did you play?
I think I had 6 or 7 of them. Because they were single strips.
This was north of Attawapiskat?
This is going up to Attawapiskat from Fort Albany, so heading north, yeah. And while they were while we were going, they were just in the midst of flooding the ice. And so, never having been on an ice road, my boss said, "Ah, it's okay, it's good." There was water this deep, and he was taking his Explorer through. Right then. Water right up to the windows.
So they opened a dam, they flooded on purpose?
No, they're out there with hoses.
Oh.
They're spraying the ice. Yeah.
Make it thicker.
Yeah.
So they can drive
on. So that they can, there's a diamond mine up in Attawapiskat.
Okay.
So that was to bring in heavy trucks, heavy equipment.
So we're talking about 3 or 4 feet thick of ice then?
Yeah. This is my boss's teepee. They have it set up behind the house, and they invite all the teachers to go and have ceremonies and stuff. They do a lot of cooking and lay down cedar and all.
So your boss is the principal at the school?
My boss was the director of education.
Okay.
And his wife was the secondary counselor. Our principal of the school was there until January and then asked to leave. So she didn't necessarily create the best environment for teaching staff, which is always a concern. Like, you have staff come and go and come and go and come and go, so it's hard to try and create a stable staff. That's my adopted dog there. This was a road which is in the midst of filling up to flood. So once breakup starts, there's no way of going from the island where the teachers and the school are to the mainland where the grocery store and the hospital are, and the airport. So you're kind of stuck. So you have to wait till breakup, or if you get evacuated, then you take the helicopter across.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So when does that happen?
Like that?
That's
scary.
Yeah, that's
ooh.
April, May. Yeah. And it lasts for about 2 weeks. So, yeah, you're kind of cut off from mainland for a bit.
So is there a lot of cars and trucks that are down in the water up there?
No, people are pretty good at,
yeah,
you know, making sure they're off there before it starts. They have a few dikes holding it, so they know that once one breaks, then stop using it, so that when the other one breaks, they can...
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
It's a learning curve right.
Yeah. And then, so that's Fort Albany. The church in the community mysteriously burnt down before we got up there. Lightning struck it. Found it later that some kids were kind of bored. So the temporary church is that white building that's right up there. That's the priest's house, and they held ceremonies in the basement. A little bit off to the right a bit, behind those trees, is the site of the even further down the road. You can't see it. The store is straight down the road there, but is the old residential school. And there's actually, while I was there, they tore it down here. I was there, I believe. There was an old electric chair still there. So, yeah, pretty...
What year were you there?
I was there in 2005. So, yeah, no, exactly.
So when talking to some of the residents and elders, was there still some remnants of negative experiences?
Oh, definitely. And that, you know, if you go into a flying community, that's a lot of what you're facing, is there's still that, you know, disconnect between family and the school, just because of everything that's happened.
So in working with the parents, you find the same kind of thing was happening?
Yeah, definitely. There's a... huge disconnect, and so a lot of what I was doing was trying to build relations back. And so just being in the community, being involved, you know, going fishing, hunting, snowshoeing, I loved it.
And was school Monday to Friday, or?
Monday to Friday. Mornings don't work. They don't work at all. And so as part of my initiative in the community was to start class at noon. Start at noon, I'll work till 6:30. Makes no difference to me when I work.
Did it work? Did you have better attendance?
Yeah, had 5 graduates that year.
Wow.
Yeah.
How many people did you have in class? Like, how many kids are in creative?
Yeah, it's kind of like Pass North a bit, where students aren't necessarily required to go to class, but if you need help, come see me. And so it was, you know, in and out, open door policy. you can come and stay for 10 minutes, or you can come and stay for a few hours and do some work if you want to. Yeah, a bit.
Do you have any, like, experience?
Not so much with me, but with some of the other teachers that were up there. I've always been pretty laid back and approachable, and so that was just, you know, most people felt at ease coming into my classroom, but in some of the other teachers that were very curriculum-focused, then they weren't really interested. Learning levels in Fort Albany, way behind the province.
Are you using ILC, Ministry of Ed?
I was, yeah.
Most teachers are doing that, or they're making their own?
No, the 11-12 program was. 9 K through 10 was set up as a regular school. So, you know, you have your 9 to 10 classes with your 30 students that attend regularly. And if students don't attend, you kind of know where they are. It's a small community. I think it was like 450 people. So most students were in class when they were supposed to be. In that
so
kind of
playing billiards, what were they doing? Where did they go?
When they weren't?
Yeah. That's
cool. I have no idea. At home, probably. Okay. Video games are huge. Mm-hmm. Huge issue. So
playing video at home?
Yeah.
The ILCs that you're using, then you obviously were coming up with the testing and the grading. But
yeah, and taking the ILC and going, no.
Yeah.
And putting in my own stuff.
Okay.
Just because a lot of it didn't apply.
So they would just go through and do the question work, the support questions,
mm-hmm.
and whatever, and then submit them to you?
Yeah, for grading. And we also did mature PLAR and stuff like that. So.
Most grade 11 and 12 students, are they handwriting or are they typing?
Handwriting, which was surprising given that we had all those computers in the classroom.
And was your handwriting fairly legible? Like,
yeah, for the most part, I can read it. You know, younger kids struggling with fine motor, but other than that.
What were you teaching?
I was teaching everything. there were three of us that were in the program, so I was in charge of the math, the business, co-op. And the other teachers that were in the program were in charge of science and English.
Sorry.
No?
What was
go ahead.
Co-op like then?
I love co-op.
But like, if you're on an island and for 2 weeks there's no way, where would co-op take place? Or
we try to hold co-op on the island. But if they were doing co-op at the store or at the band office, that kind of thing, then if you couldn't get across, you can get across and we'll make up the time later.
So everything
yeah.
was local, co-op.
Yeah, it's all local. There's unless I'm putting you on a plane to live out of town.
Is there a period of time during the year when they went hunting?
Culture break happens in October.
What's it called?
Yeah.
Culture break?
Culture break, yeah.
And how long?
1 week. 1 week for goose. Yeah. Yeah. During the goose migration. That's when families would go out.
So no caribou in that area?
Caribou in the winter, yeah.
So would they hunt for caribou?
Oh yes. Raw caribou? It's pretty good.
Raw caribou.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good.
I'm gonna order you some.
Yeah. There you go.
I'll your snack next time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. right on the ice. It's good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, wonderful community. I'd go back up there in a heartbeat. I actually met up with the old director of education and the and his wife at the Powell in Hamilton that we went down for.
Was that your involvement in those types of activities? Was that encouraged by the director, or was that something you did on your own? Like
no,
you know,
it's connection? Making the connections is pretty much done on your own. Yeah.
What kinds of materials did you use for the courses for the ILCs?
Like support materials or
no, just general materials. First of all, how were the students responsive to those?
But for the most part, they were pretty good, especially when you take the assignment and go like that to it and change it to something that's more appropriate to them. So it's a lot of time typing out your own materials and doing some research and getting elders' input and stuff like that into what would apply, given this is what I need to achieve, what works.
And what's their sense, what they were utilizing it for? What's your sense you got from them when they're utilizing these materials? Or where are they heading? Or
A lot of them are heading out.
Yeah.
That's the major thing, is how do I get out of here? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they're headed to Timmins to go to college. And then a lot of them end up coming back. So, you know, working in the band office or teaching in the school, native language and stuff like that.
Any sense of what kind of subjects they were tuned towards more so than others?
Science, co-op, so anything that's really hands-on.
Right.
Math, not so much. That was the hardest subject to try and get them to take. But you know, you offer an MEL 3E, and it's like, okay, I can do it.
What about history or anthropology or sociology?
No.
No.
No interest.
What about environmental science?
Yeah.
Hands-on.
Yeah, all the stuff that's hands-on. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Park conservation.
Even like an SNC is more acceptable, you know, more accepted by the community than you would have in anthropology. Because, you know, why would you want to learn about somebody when you still don't even know about yourself yet? Kind of thing.
Now, when you look at residential schools and all that, is they removed all the children from all those knowledge givers.
Yeah, no, exactly.
And this was done over, and it started, you know, when you start looking at it in the early 1800s.
Yeah.
And so you have that void of history in a lot of these places.
Yeah.
And now you're trying to get them interested in something that was taken away from them.
Yeah, exactly.
Some of them really don't understand where they are.
Yeah.
You know, and then after, you know, they turn around, they give us the gold. They also gave us our traditions back.
Yeah.
But that was after.
After it had been lost for
like 50, 65 years.
Yeah.
Then they said, oh, well, then you can practice it.
Yeah.
But then we had to go through the church in order for us to practice it. And then it was all, oh, you can't be doing that because that's paganism.
No, exactly. Yeah.
And guess what? We can excommunicate you.
Yeah.
Because they did all that.
That's still happening in 2005 in Fort Albany.
Yeah.
Like,
and a lot of the parents of those, you know, that came out of there are in fear of that.
Yeah.
You know, just recently, you know, we've been told not to stand like this. We stood there because we were ashamed of ourselves.
Yeah.
And that was drilled into us. How many times have you taken a child in front of a class and said, this person here wasn't doing something, and that child will stand like this? You do that so often, that child will always stand like that. Just like when you beat your wife, she'll learn to stand here. And then that will be passed down. Well, but we would then never again.
Yeah.
You stand up. Because we know in our lives we are all equal, and we all have a voice.
Is it that sort of thing in life was reserved? But how could the effect of the residential school, because from what I've read and from what I've heard, is that these parents end up, and the like, children of these parents end up turning to drugs and alcohol, but that we say it doesn't apply to reserve. How did
well, it applies, but it's not as big as, you know, what some people make it out to be. It's not the whole community. It's a few, you know, it's a smaller proportion of Fort Albany, anyways. Some of the students that I've had from summer reserves, that's all they know, kind of thing. But
Have there been resources for them?
There are. The health center is a huge one. The school is another one. There's a lot of counselors and native language teachers that are there as support. There's, in 2005, which wasn't that long ago, there's still a huge disconnect in parenting. You know, it's kids trying to be parents, or parents not knowing what to do. So, you know, you wonder why the education system is behind. Well, it's because in kindergarten, you need to start from square one, because some of the students here, they can't speak their language, but they can't speak English either.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you're trying to teach them in an English system or any language, and, you know, they don't know what they're doing.
Who was your first teacher? I'll ask that of anybody.
Yeah, parents.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and when you look at that model, the perfect family, you have the husband and wife in the center of the child. That immediate circle around that was the Nishomish Nokomis, grandmother, grandfathers from all sides, and the aunts and uncles that are around there, and then the cousins. And they all are there to support the raising of that child out here in this society. Right around that family is our educational system. And around that, in the same circle, traveling that same sphere, is our church, our religion. Outside of that circle is a law enforcement to serve and protect. When they started with the residential school, Edgerton Ryerson turned around and he stated, the only use we can get out of these children, if we want to, is to remove them from their family, remove them from their grandparents, so that it would sever that umbilical cord. And then we can form them into whatever we want to.
Or so the thinking was.
And then we would create these schools, and then we will make the children, the residents, work in order so that we could subsidize them. And when they did that, they basically destroyed them.
Yeah. Well, you remove the emotional bond and nothing else
now,
works.
Every your role models that you pick up are there when you're growing up. You take a small animal from the wilderness, it will identify with you. And you break that bond, so then they can't live out in their environment. Now you turn around and you do that over seven generations, and there is nothing to teach because they have nothing to teach. So this is what they did. And then those who took us, the first thing they did, they chopped off our hair. Removed our hair. Where else did they do that in history? Germany. You know, what's the same there? You know, they put a fence around them schools. What did they do with those camps? Who worked in those camps? Who worked in them schools? And you see that. Now, in our society out here, if a child runs away from home, what happens? You know, like, you're taught, if you're having trouble at home to see your grandparents, the grandparents aren't there, so then you're taught to seek refuge in the church or school for assistance, and these are your abusers. Where are you going to go now? You run away? If you run away, if a child runs away today out here, and the cops pick them up, they take them back there. Do they just, oh, I found your kid outside here? No. They'll do a full investigation to make sure that child is not in, you know, in danger. But in the residential schools, they took them and dropped them off them without any answers or any questions asked. Here you go, because that child was wrong. Now, that child, when he grows up, he resents because his parents could not stop his removal, and he doesn't understand that, why that happened. And then, so he resents those adults, and then he gets to school and they beat him for his language, they chop off his hair, he resents that. So now there are two groups of adults that he doesn't learn to trust. And then he goes to the church, and they're being abused there. And they run away to the cops, and the cops turn around and take them back. So now you see, every adult that child has run into in their life, he learns to mistrust. He can't trust them.
And so coming from that environment and trying to be a parent is extremely difficult. And so it's going to take generations before the bond is, you know, created again. But,
I think we're dealing with that all over the place.
Yeah.
Like all families.
Yeah.
Even, for example, my mother went to the Chapel residential school, so I had to deal with all that when I was younger.
Yeah.
And then it's still, like, in our family, we're still all dealing with that.
Yeah.
And with our children.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Did you talk to a number of parents?
Yeah. Tried to. You know, you try as best you can. I didn't work with any of the younger children.
Right.
So I worked with a lot of the younger children's parents.
What's the sense of integration, like integration into the school system? And is that the way they see moving forward for their kids? And so, I mean, from your, you know,
it's a little bit different when the entire population of the school is from the community. So, you know, you're with your peers, you're with your cousins that you grow up with, so it's not as scary as it is to be shipped out.
But the different knowledge, the different way of seeing the world, different way of seeing nature, you have use of abstract concepts removed in many respects. So I'm just getting the sense for, you know, okay, so you're saying most of them are going towards stimulants and so on. So they see, well, integration into this form of the economy is the way to go. Is that fairly like a given thing? They don't question that, or
no? They and you know, that's one of the things is they don't question it, and
well, that's understandable.
But
I mean,
then they get out and don't finish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because
what?
it's too overwhelming.
Yeah,
you know, you come from a community of 350
sure.
of your family, and you're out on your own
yeah.
with no support, and so. Well, that's one of the main problems, right? There's no, if you want to stay in your community, there's no jobs. You know, if that's the route you want to take and you want to make money and all that kind of stuff, then you almost have to leave, which is sad because that's just the reality of some communities. Although, where I taught in Wabagoon, Eagle Lake and Wabascang, they're considering a partnership. It's called Two Feathers. And they're doing a huge lumber partnership with a company in Finland to make prefab houses for a company in Japan. And so the community is willing now to step forth and say, okay, I want to learn. I want to do apprenticeships. I want to do this. I want to do that.
I get out of teacher's college. I did years in university, but how does someone make a connection to reserve and say, I want to go and teach?
You just do that. You know, you connect with chief and council, depending on the reserve that you want to teach in. Put your name out there, and usually they're willing to accept any help that you can provide. Especially if you've got First Nations background, then they know that they almost know that you're not just doing it because you want to make a quick buck. You know, you're actually doing it because you care. One of the biggest things.
What was the suicide rate when you were up
there? It wasn't too bad in Fort Albany. One suicide while I was there. One tragic death. A student of mine was going to Ksetchuan on a snowmobile to meet up with her future husband. She was pregnant at the time. Happened to hit a snowstorm, got lost, turned around, ended up on the bay, left the skidoo, got off to walk towards land. Her future husband and her father-in-law, they got on skidoos and left to find her, found the skidoo that she had left that had run out of gas, left a skidoo there for her to find had she come back, left it running. She came back, got about 100 meters, that's getting run out of gas. And so she froze to death outside. And so that was the most tragic one, the death that we had while we were there. Several elders also passed away that year. So the community was pretty hard hit.
That's what my friends told me, that they're always dealing with death.
Yeah.
Like it's a constant thing. They're dealing with
the
mass suicides and death.
Yeah. Fort Albany's suicide rate isn't too. You know, it's not huge by any means, but even one impacts the community. Like,
are the kids sniffing weed there?
Fort Albany, no. Kasechewan, possibly. Some of the other students that I've had from different reserves, it's pretty bad.
In terms of alcohol, any of those reserves dry reserves?
Yes.
They all are?
Yes.
Out of curiosity, like I'm assuming people on reserves on the street drives and has, how do they get them?
Like, they're flown in.
You can get whatever you get down here, you can get up there.
For 10 times the price.
10 times the price. And they don't, they're into prescription drugs.
Yeah. That's
everything.
But
everything
prescription drugs is, I think, is the new, you know, it's the biggest problem that communities are facing.
Yeah. And basically, when you're damaged and you're hurt, you have no hope. And this is where our children.
And also, in terms of society in general, you see everything that's given. You know, everything comes so quick.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's the quickest solution? There you go, it's right there. So, you know, instead of taking a step back and assessing and taking your time, it's how can I get a fix right now?
All our traditional teachings that we were given can help us if we get those teachings early. So when you don't have those teachings, and then you lose your way. Anishinaabe, we don't need a compass, but if you were never taught those directions, you'd get lost.
Yeah.
And, you know, back in 100 years ago, that woman would never have been up there.
No.
And she would never have been lost.
Just wondering too, because you're saying stereotypes, whatever
they weren't as prevalent.
It was because that area was set up differently. It was running water, obviously, throughout
the
town.
The community was pretty good in terms of, you know, having what you need, the essentials. Communities that don't, there's a huge struggle. Like, if you look at communities like Pikangikum, for example, it's there are huge social issues.
That's the one that we've been waiting for a new school for
years and years. Years and years. Adwapskat is also waiting for a new school.
Yeah.
They're in portables. It's cold.
It really bothers me when the government sends millions of dollars overseas to help other countries, and we have third world conditions in our country.
Mm-hmm.
Even 1 hour, 1.5 hours from here, there's six nations and there's third world conditions here. I have a friend who I used to go visit, and she had three children and a husband, and they lived in a house long five ago. They were running water, and for their toilet, they would have to be bucket with a toilet seat on.
It's completely
It's
completely different if you choose to live like that, but if you're, you know, if you see everybody else and then you're forced to live like that, then you have a whole different perspective.
And the water's contaminated, so we all have to bring in water, which is most likely contaminated,
maybe.
Right?
Yeah.
Actually, Jody, I don't know whether or not you, I'm sure you're probably more well aware, but at the ROM, they had the screening for that video, Third World Canada. If you've not seen Third World Canada, I actually have the sheet somewhere in the package to order it. But I just witnessed very brief clips from it, and they talk about exactly that and the conditions. And
it's a great movie.
It was a documentary, and then how suicide rates and conditions, and it's a bit of a dark.
At the next school that I taught at, I had students from Big Crow Lake, or KI, where the reserve in Third World Canada.
If anyone's interested, take a look at
it. Yeah. So, Brian, do you want to show a couple more slides, and then we'll
wrap it up? Sure, sounds good. Pelican Falls is a high school that's located in Lac Seul, First Nation land. On Lac Seul, and Pelican Falls services Lac Seul. They also service reserves up north, so they have students from Fort Severn, Big Trout Lake, Kiwanik, Sandy Lake, and there's a few smaller ones. There's a sister school to Pelican Falls in Thunder Bay that's called Dennis Rockwell Marty. So that's the mascots, or the Timberwolves. Great school. To this day, I miss teaching at Pelican Falls. I miss my students there. It's amazing. This is our co-op club that I was co-runner of. We took students 2 years in a row, students that have never traveled in their lives. We went to Yellowknife, Northwest Territories, 1 year, and then we went to Montreal, Quebec, the second, for Blueprint for the Future, First Nations student conference.
I would imagine there's a lot of students that have never been out of the North.
No. Yeah.
They don't know anything about our life.
No, exactly. Yeah. And so giving them the opportunity to see and experience firsthand some of those things. Is,
how did you get funding for that? Did you have to write proposals, or did you?
Yes. Plane flights I actually got donated, because, you know, when you're good with words, stuff comes to you quite freely. So flights were donated by Air Canada for a lot of this these trips. There's also funding through Blueprint for the Future. They also provide some accessibility to students if you're coming from remote locations.
You had to do that. You had to do that on your own.
Yeah. Me and the other teacher is in the back there in the blue. That's Desta Buzois. And so that's just some of Yellowknife. It's amazing up there. You can actually walk around in the dead of winter without a toque on. It's cold, but it's not wet cold like you have in Ontario.
Cold.
It's a dry cold. This is our graduating class. One of the graduating classes that I was involved with. This is our safe grad. This is in Dryden, Ontario, and it's their monument in Dryden at City Hall. While I was there, I taught a whole bunch of subjects: co-op, math, business, English, humanities. When you work in a First Nation, you have to be able to do what you're asked. Just because resources aren't there. So if they ask you to teach English and you don't know what you're doing, learn how to teach English.
That's all right.
Yeah. But, you know, it's all a learning curve. And the students see it, and they appreciate the fact that you're learning how to teach them at the same time that they're learning.
And it's not going to be like technocratic top-down, because in a sense, I think...
You're all learning together. Mm-hmm. Nobody looks down on anybody else. It's not a competition for marks, for sure. You know, it's how can we work together to get through it and get it done. And
yeah, so you have a relational form of learning.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you want them really to understand these basic aspects.
So you don't stand up. You don't stand up in front of the class and this is my lesson today. You sit on a desk and you talk, and that's how you learn. You have conversations and. You take pieces from one student that says something and you turn it to, okay, that matches this expectation. So this is what I'm doing right now. I'm not going to worry about going in fully planned about let's do vector equations.
So Brian, just in a kind of closing summary, there's a few people here that would like to teach on a reserve eventually. What are maybe two or three reasons why one should teach on a reserve from your experience?
Culture's amazing. You feel like part of the community as long as you're not coming up there with a closed mind. And I love it.
you go back if you...
go back in a heartbeat.
And you said your wife is First Nations background?
She has some First Nations in her background. She's not sure where from. She's from Kapuskasing, Ontario.
Okay.
But she's very culturally oriented and hooked up with an elder. She's an ECE. She worked at the daycare in Eagle Lake and loved the kids and got a great connection with one of the elders in the community and formed a bond, and they still call, and she cries and he talks, and that's what they do.
So two of you sound like you would be very comfortable in the future of going back to reserve? Or
definitely. Southern Ontario is great, but it's busy. Like, it's busy. I don't like it at all.
How long have you been back here for?
this is my first year. I moved down here in August.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm...
culture shock.
Culture shock, huge. Definitely culture shock, for sure.
No, there's a big difference from the north to the south.
Very much
even
so.
I still miss being in the north.
Yeah.
It's a lot slower cities.
It's a different... You know, I commuted an hour, but I commuted an hour with deer and moose. You know? That was my drive. Where's the deer? I hit one with my car, and I 360'd my car a couple of times on the reserve roads, but that's beside the point. I love it. Down here, it's, you know, I commute 2.5 hours a day just to get to work. Like, stuck in bumper-to-bumper traffic with people honking their horns and veering into the side of you, and just chill out and relax a bit, you know? You don't need to be in such a hurry to get everywhere. We'll get there eventually, but we're buying a house, so we're stuck here for a little bit. We're moving to Orangeville, which is small and out of the way a bit.
We'll be neighbors. I live in here.
Oh, nice. Yeah, we were looking in Aaron, too. But, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my students in Wabagoon. Ice fishing. Love it. Love ice fishing when you can have 30 holes and not worry about regulations. And you put some wood down, you put grab sticks, and have those as your rods. And you just pull them up as they hit. Yeah, it's great. This is a mural that students painted in Wabaskang. Wedding, we went to traditional wedding. And those are my coworkers. Donna Chief is a softball Hall of Fame. She went to school on scholarship in the States. First Nations from Wabagoon Lake First Nation. Huge advocate for her community. Leanne Ross is a teacher in Wabaskang. She's in the middle. And Julia Pixiatis is the teacher in Eagle Lake that I worked with. That's it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, on behalf of the group, Ryan, thanks for sharing
this. Thank you for having me.
Photos and everything else. Thanks so much.
Perfect. Thank you. I'll quickly skip through some.
And Joanne and John, thanks so much for hosting today.
Yeah.
Connecting. Anyone have those? If you have that white page, there's you're welcome to join Pan and get connected. Robin sends out these great messages about all sorts of cool programming happenings. So make sure you
learn
that and sign up.